Welcome to a burning fire. Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. The account of the thief on the cross is familiar to Bible students. It is a record of significant events. And sometimes you hear people say, "I will be saved like the thief on the cross." And by this they mean they can be saved by faith only, or be saved without being baptized. But the account of the thief is often abused and misused to teach something that simply is not the saving truth. Christ and the two thieves were on their respective crosses. The irony of the event is that what appeared to be the death of Jesus Christ and a victory for evil was actually a necessary step in God's plan for offering salvation to mankind and the overthrow of the power of the devil. What seemed to put down God's plan was in reality the setting up of God's plan and bringing it toward completion. Now the record of the thief on the cross, as we read in Luke chapter 23, presents one thief as railing against Jesus, while the other, railing at first, sought his favor. The response that Jesus gave him has given rise to at least three false doctrines. One, that people today can be saved like the thief on the cross was saved, that is, in the same manner. And two, that the thief is an example of what some call deathbed conversion. And three, that it is not necessary to be baptized in order to be saved. But friend, an honest investigation of the record and the context of what was said and done will not show such doctrines to be the truth. For what does the thief ask when he says, "Remember me when thou comest into thy kingdom"? Just what did he expect? Did he understand the nature of the Lord's kingdom, that it was to be a spiritual kingdom rather than a physical one? Is it likely that he did, inasmuch as even the apostles retained a misunderstanding right up to the time that Jesus ascended into heaven? Did he realize that being in the kingdom meant the salvation of the soul? Again, we must give the thief a lot more credit than seems deserving, because most looked upon the kingdom of which Jesus had taught to be a deliverance of the Jews from Roman occupation. Did he expect Jesus to perform a miracle and come down off the cross and allow him to come down also? Now, possibly this is what he had in mind. He might have been able to see the sign that said Jesus was King of the Jews and may have known of the mighty works the Lord had done on earth. But the indication is that he was aware of the innocence of Jesus. The fact is, we cannot determine with a dogmatic positiveness just what was in the thief's mind and what he expected to receive from Jesus. The best we can determine is by what Jesus, the all-knowing Lord, answered, and what he understood the thief to be asking. Surely his answer would have accommodated the question, whatever was meant by it. But let us suppose for a moment that the thief had clearly in mind salvation in heaven for his spirit. Not likely, but let's suppose that's what he had in mind. Does this mean that we can be saved that way? Jesus answered him, "Today thou shalt be with me in paradise." It is certain that wherever Jesus went that day, the thief went also. Where did Jesus go that day? Acts 2 and verse 31 tells us he went to hell, more definitely, Hades, the intermediate and unseen state of the dead. You see, the word hell, as is used in the King James Version, has two meanings. It could refer to the place of eternal torment, as the Greek word Gehenna is translated hell, but hell was also used to translate the Greek word Hades or Hades. Neither is incorrect. But admittedly, the distinction found in the American Standard Version between the two renditions makes the matters clearer to grasp, at least at the first. The word that tells us where Jesus went is the word Hades. Jesus went to the unseen state of the dead, not into eternal hell and punishment. Nor did he go to heaven, where the Father is, John 20 and verse 17. He went to the place that corresponds to Abraham's bosom in Luke chapter 16, where Lazarus went. The study of Hades reveals it to be a place of two parts, one of torment and the other of peace, called a paradise. Jesus went to paradise, and the thief was promised that he would go there also. Now, we have no doubt that the thief will enjoy the glories of God in eternity. But does that prove that we can get to the same place the same way? Friend, the answer is no. We, you see, are saved by the gospel, Romans 1:17. The gospel includes the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, 1 Corinthians 15, 1-4. The thief could not have been saved by the gospel because the gospel was not yet presented or even fully developed and revealed. The thief, a Jew, lived and died before the gospel age, and he was subject to the law of Moses, which was nailed to the cross and taken out of the way by the death of Christ, Colossians 2 and verse 14. You see, we nor anyone else any longer live under that law that's been removed, Galatians 3, 23 through 25. The first to be saved by the gospel were those on Pentecost. The events about the thief were prior to that time. So the thief died before the gospel, and its conditions were in effect. So what he did or did not do is not a pattern for us today. Now, while Christ lived, he could and did dispense with his blessings to others any way he saw fit. But upon his death, then his blessings are granted according to his will. And before a will goes into effect, there must be the death of the testator, the will maker, Hebrews 9 and verse 16. Unlike the thief, we live subject to the will of Christ. Now let me illustrate. Do you know that prior to 1913, nobody in this country paid income tax? It was not a law. But since that time, most have had to pay it. Can one be released from the tax obligation on the basis that those prior to 1913 paid no tax? Why, certainly not. We live under different requirements. So the claim that anyone can be saved like the thief today is false and disastrously misleading. It is unfortunate that some place such confidence in what they call deathbed conversion. And what is meant is that here's a person that's dying who may have rejected the Lord all of his life, and he can call out to God for salvation and be saved without meeting any other condition. The thief is cited as an example of that kind of salvation. Now, we certainly have no doubt about the eternity of a dying man who has lived wickedly and now realizes he must face God. We don't doubt his sincerity. His desire for salvation is not questioned. But sincerity has nothing to do with the matter, however. It takes more than sincerity to be saved. Jesus said, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven," Matthew 7:21. Are we to think that the sincerity of one dying sets aside the will of Christ? Are we not aware that there is no such thing as being almost saved but not altogether? Acts 26. We know that in life men can wait too long to seize opportunities given them until they're past. Why is it so unthinkable that men can rebel against God so long that they've passed the opportunity for salvation? Let me illustrate again. Consider a man going downstream, holding to a log, being swept toward a falls and toward death. One by one, those on the bank call to him, throw him a rope, urge him to grab the rope and be pulled to safety. But he refuses. He passes one after the other until he passes the last one. Now, he may now realize he wants to be rescued, but he also realizes that he has passed his last hope for safety. He's just waited too long. Now there's no way open to him. Friend, people can reject God until they find themselves in conditions where they cannot obey. Do they have the right to expect God to save them, contrary to his revealed will? Oh no, listening friend. The thief is not an example of so-called deathbed conversion under the will of Christ. He was not saved by the will that went into effect on Pentecost. And dear friend, you must consider this. While we do not for a moment grant the validity of deathbed conversion apart from obedience to the will of Christ, even if God would save you that way, that really does not apply to you at all, does it? You are not likely on your deathbed. You could do his will, if only you would.
And even if God saved the thief by faith only and deathbed conversion, there's not one word of comfort to you who have the opportunity to conform to that revealed will of Christ and obey the conditions of salvation included in that will. The record of the thief is misused to attempt to show that one is saved today without being baptized. Now, in response to such a claim, let me affirm to you that nobody can prove the thief was never baptized, nor can we prove that he was. Efforts to prove that he was are as fallacious as efforts to prove that he was not. But there is more evidence that possibly he was than that he was not, because we read in Matthew 3:5, "Then went out to him," that's to John the Baptist, "Jerusalem and all Judea and all the region round about." Yes, people went to be baptized of John, and John baptized for the remission of sins. Is it possible that the thief could have been among those that went out to John? Oh, it's possible, yes. But nobody can prove that he was. But since nobody can prove that he was not, nobody can say with any sort of confidence that the thief was never baptized, can they? Either way is to argue from silence, but that's not the real issue. The thief was never commanded to be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of sins, as people were, beginning with Pentecost, Acts 2:38. But since that time, every record of conversion found in the New Testament concludes with baptism. There's not an exception. There were the Jews in Acts 2, the Samaritans in Acts 8, the Ethiopian in Acts 8, Saul of Tarsus in Acts 9, Cornelius in Acts 10, Lydia in Acts 16, the Philippian jailer in Acts 16, the Corinthians, Acts 18. All these lived this side of the cross like we do. All of these lived since Pentecost. All of them were baptized. They were not saved without it. By what reasoning does one think people today can be saved without it? Without obeying the Lord's conditions, as stated in Mark 16:16, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." Have you ever thought of yourself saved like the thief? My dear listening friend, hear me well. For the sake of your soul, abandon such false doctrines and obey the truth. Baptism saves, 1 Peter 3:21. It is embodied in the will of Christ that baptism saves. And who has the right, or who should even have the desire, to remove it and set it aside if what Jesus taught is there for us to follow? Dear friend, we must obey Christ. He's the author of salvation that obey Him. You can't be saved like the thief on the cross. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.